Welcome back, Grandstand episode 20. Peabody here in Paris. F. Knowles in New York?
No, another New Hampshire. Okay. Yeah, one of those places that we hijacked from the English and decided we're going to make it better and bigger and greater. It's 4th of July, dude. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if there's one weekend to fucking flex, this is it, right?
Going into Silverstone weekend, guess what, pussies? Talk about independence. We set the precedent.
Yeah, how was your 4th of July?
Well, let's put it this way. Do you ever go to a rental car company and they give you a car that you absolutely do not want to be seen driving in? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, in Europe, they give us like comically small cars that you can't even fit your suitcase in. Yeah.
It reminds me that I went to see the Da Vinci Code back in the day, and a smart car came on the screen. This is in New York. Smart car came on the screen, and the entire theater started laughing because America had never seen a car that small before. Everyone laughed at the Tom Hanks whipping around Paris in a smart car.
I feel like Americans put smart cars in the back of their pickup truck to like go race them in an open field or something.
Yeah, that's definitely something I'm sure someone's done. If you know, my theory is if you can think it, they've done it. But we show up to the rental car, and these guys try to give us a Kia Soul. If you've never seen a Kia Soul, it looks like a box on wheels with like some sort of front end put out just to house the engine. And
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. They advertised it with a bunch of fucking hamsters driving around, and like, it was bad. The whole thing sucked. Smelled like somebody smoked an entire pack of Newports.
Oh, nice. That's very American.
And so it was just a no. And then finally, the guy who was renting it was like, you know what? Give him the Dodge Challenger. Ooh. So.
What a way to get into your 4th of July weekend.
Big win. White. Well, I mean, it's white Dodge Challenger Hemi. I'm not going to tell you what speed I've gotten it up to because that would be incriminating. Yeah. But we went fast. Let's put it that way.
Damn. Well. Sounds like I'm missing out on some hot dogs and speed here.
Oh, dude, I'm going to have many hot dogs today.
Well, I'll tell you who did not have hot dogs this weekend. It's Max Verstappen winning his 42nd race in F1. So he officially surpasses Senna, and his 4th race win in a row this year. And that brings his tally up to 7 out of 9. Continues to dominate. We had a sprint weekend. We got a lot to talk about. Let's roll.
I liked
that
my
intro.
Story better than yeah. Roll the intro, dude.
A question for all of you except Romain Grosjean.
To whom it may concern, fuck you.
More ladies in the paddock? Yeah, more paddock access to some women. There's too many dudes.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that, except that he was being a pussy.
That last Max comment is quite relevant this weekend.
Don't get me started.
I think I want to get this started. We had a sprint race that had a bit of weather. It was raining, which makes conditions more difficult. And we saw both Red Bulls get into it at the start with Checo getting a better start, passing Max, maybe pushing Max into the grass, and then Max retaliating by taking Checo to the outside, not once, but twice. and clearly showing him, this is my house, Checo. You better fucking listen to the rules. Take your shoes off, please.
You know what I think should happen? I think Checo should contract George Russell out to make him a PowerPoint presentation. And in that PowerPoint presentation, it will be every single moment Max has done that to other drivers in his career. It's crazy. I don't know. I mean, listen, it seemed like they figured it out on Sunday, and they were, you know, they seemed publicly chummy. Having said that,
PR.
Yeah, they're like, we don't need this at our home race. That's my Red Bull PR voice.
Where's the Austrian accent there?
I don't know, dude. It feels like that could be offensive. You know, especially considering it's 4th of July, you know, we won World War II. So anyway, having said that, I wish Will Buxton was here and said what's on my mind for me. Max shouldn't have made such a public scene about it. Anytime Max gets raced hard, he does this. It's just silly. And here I was like really being like, wow, Max is, he's on his game. He is really like driving at an impeccable level. And then he gets, you know, his teammate is like, I need to recover after a terrible, terrible Friday and Saturday. Anyway, that's where I sit on it. I don't think it's necessary.
Right. Well, I might surprise you here. I think that what Checo did was unnecessary as well. I think the whole thing was unnecessary.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, fair, but
it does underline the fact that if Checo ever thought that this team would let him win, that he is just very wrong. And
he is mistaken.
I felt bad for the guy. Yeah, he's just, yeah. Ooh, sadly mistaken. And after the sprint, I was just thinking, I hope his manager is starting to talk to other teams, because I don't know how bright his future is at Red Bull, and I don't know how far he can get. I don't know how much higher he can get, but just play number two to Lord Max over there.
Lord Max? All right.
Yeah. I mean, it's his house. It's kind of like, man, Max is ruthless. If there's one thing, that's the word for this weekend for me. He's fucking ruthless. And I think he was driving at an impeccable level, but yeah, that just showed that there are no friends on the grid, and especially when you're a Red Bull. So I don't want to, you know, start the whole conversation of, is Checo going to get the boot or not? I think he's good enough to be there, play second fiddle, but I don't think he should have any ambitions higher than that, unfortunately.
Fine. Yeah.
And I'm sad to say that, you know, I don't like saying it. It's just, I'm just noticing what I saw. Yeah, how about we talk about something else in the sprint that was interesting.
Something less triggering.
Exciting, more uplifting. We had Hulk, who qualified in P4 and who was in P2 for a while, holding off Perez, which, first of all, badass. Hulk is always great in mixed conditions, and it was awesome. The Haas even pitted him out of the points to put on the slicks in the end, and he made his way back, and that was just a great sprint for the Hulk.
I like that. A great sprint for the Hulk.
Taken out of context, this doesn't sound like an F1 podcast.
Could be part of a universe somewhere. I don't know. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I really love seeing Hulk and K-Mag on track. I mean, talk about, they should be called like the Redemption Boys or something. There needs to be like a nickname for them. Just for the sheer fact that they're still in Formula One. That's right.
The comeback kids. I don't know. Yeah, for sure.
Spelled C-U-M. Listen, I have, here's my thing. I have more to say on not Hulk, but Haas. Later in this episode.
But the sprint, I want to talk about the sprint in general. I think we had some of the best racing we've had in a sprint race since the sprint is coming to F1.
Fully agree. And you know what's funny is Valtteri went full BVE, big Valtteri energy. And he's like, nice. I don't know what everybody, he was like, I don't know what everybody else is complaining about. I love it. And even in Lewis seemed to love it. I know Charles loves it because it's pure racing, right? The risks are super high. Reward actually isn't that much. Like, you don't get that much in return.
Yeah, but only the top eight score points, right?
Yeah, but even those points, like, minimal compared to what you could get on Sunday. Well, for a smaller team, it's not minimal, but
yeah, for a team like Haas, it's huge. Like the Hulk scored exactly 3 points,
right?
Which means that they are now ahead of AlphaTauri in the standings.
Yeah, well, right now it doesn't mean a lot, but savage today.
Yeah, just like Max, man.
I just think I love the sprint. I think it's great. I think when you're on the top, and Max does say that he doesn't like it, but a lot of drivers do like it because it's pure, it's like genuine racing, right?
And I think it worked well this time because we had strategy involved, right? Usually if it was a dry race, we wouldn't get any pit stops, but we had changeable conditions. We had Russell coming in for slicks really early, which really paid off for him. And he was lighting up the field, almost got Ocon on the line. I think he missed out by 0.009, 9/1000s. Just a very entertaining race, I thought. And we saw a lot of close battling. I think Lando, who is definitely one of the stories of the weekend in Austria, kind of got screwed by this whole Red Bull battle as everyone had to slow down and he dropped down the field. But he showed what he could do wheel to wheel. So a lot of fun. And the race did not have mixed conditions like we thought it would. It was very dry, but we had a lot of drama with a little white line, little track limit, and a lot of drivers weren't able to keep it between the white lines this weekend.
There's a joke in that. I'm not going to say it, but
I was setting it up. You didn't go for it.
I wonder. It feels like a problem that like Bernie Ecclestone had at some point in his career, problem with white lines.
With Max mostly and their private parties.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah, we'll do a grandstand investigative story on that, you know, a dateline on that. Anyway, yeah, man.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, just Google Max mostly orgy. You'll see.
Pretty simple.
Yeah, pretty quick search. But so that's different kind of white lines there. This weekend, though, Formula One and the FIA were enforcing track limits very strictly, especially turn 9 and 10. And we had a record amount of laps deleted in qualifying. Checo didn't make it to Q3 because of it.
Nope.
Because he kept going over the line, which at the end, if you're Christian Horner, you're like, come on, man, just put in a fucking banker lap. It'll be quick enough. Lewis Hamilton got caught out. And in the race, we had a lot of drivers that got caught out, so much so that the race direction had to look at over 1,200 in infringements after the race and dished out even more penalties. So whatever we had as final results at the end of the race changed slightly because a lot of drivers got additional penalties added onto their race time.
All right, so I don't even know where to start with the white lines, but what have we seen track limits just completely overshadow an entire race like this?
No, this is the first time, and it always is a problem here, but if you compare it to last year, this is crazy. This is night and day.
There are tons of memes coming out during the race about it. But there was like, there's that scene from The Green Mile when he's like, I'm tired, boss. And it's,
oh no.
The race, it was like the race steward putting out the black and white flag. And it's just, I'm tired, boss.
Oh, that's good. Dude, that's good.
Yeah, there are some good ones. That dude's arm there. I mean, all of their arms must have been tired because it was just, and even the guy who has to like push the button to put that on screen, he's like, who got the penalty? When, how?
They even had a new graphic that we've never seen, which was,
oh, right,
the following drivers list of, I don't think, 6 or 7 drivers have yet to serve their penalties. And as for viewers, for casual viewers who are like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, what is a black and white flag? Please someone explain it to me.
What I thought was really funny too was that drivers were just ratting on each other. Like Lando was complaining about, man, Lewis every single lap, and then Lewis was complaining about Checo. It just got silly. It was like seeing them in a playground, you know, at recess, and all just ratting each other out.
Well, after the race, there's a great, great scene when they're doing driver interviews after the race. And it's Lewis and Lando. And Lando goes, you know, it's not personal. And Lewis, yeah,
nothing
like,
personal.
Yeah. Lewis like gives him like a soft fist bump. He's like, yeah, definitely not personal.
I think he said great race today, like, or fantastic job. And then, yeah. And then Lando goes back to his interview and he's like, he would have done the same to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were,
he goes, it's not the car. It was the drive. He goes, it's not the driver. It's a car.
Yeah. That's just him being British and fanboying over Lewis.
All right, here's a question. How many drivers got a penalty?
All right, so these are the drivers that got additional penalties after the race, which meant they already had penalties. So, and Carlos Sainz is the first one to get a 10-second penalty. Lewis Hamilton, 10-second penalty. All of these are additional to what they already had during the race. Gasly had a 10-second penalty. Albon had a 10-second penalty. Logan Sargeant had 5 and then a 10, so 15 seconds added on. Esteban Ocon wins this one. He had a 5 plus a 10 plus another 5 plus another 10 penalty. So that's 30-second penalty. Oh my God. And De Vries had a 5-second penalty, for forcing K-Mag off the track. And then he had a 5 plus a 10-second penalty for track limits. And then finally, Yuki Tsunoda, 10 seconds plus a 5 seconds for track limits.
Okay, oof. So that's what? How many drivers is that?
8.
8.
Almost half the field. There are 2 drivers who didn't have a single infringement whole race. Do you know who those 2 are?
Max?
Nope.
Oh. 2 drivers?
Yep.
Valtteri?
Nope. So his teammate, Guan Yu Zhou.
Okay.
And then Sir PowerPoint, George Russell.
Sir PowerPoint.
Actually, I removed the sir. He's not been knighted yet, but
yeah.
Mr. PowerPoint.
Ooh, yeah, don't say that in front of Lewis.
Yeah, especially, we're going to Silverstone.
Yep. Dude, crazy. Wow.
So it's opening up this whole debate now about track limits of, like, you know, the drivers should know, we should put, you know, gravel traps. And at the end of the day, it turns out that Formula One asked the track to put gravel traps, and they did not want to because they didn't want to spend the money putting them in, then taking them out when MotoGP comes, because MotoGP doesn't deal with gravel traps because it's really dangerous for them once they go off and they can really get injured. So it comes down to, shocker, looks like a bit of a money issue once again here.
Well, so is life.
Drop the mic.
Yeah. Episode done. Yeah. That's all this is about anyway.
What's your take on it? Because you have drivers, these are some of the best drivers in the world, right? Are you one of those who's saying, why can't they just keep it in the white lines or extenuating circumstances? Because clearly, if those were walls, you wouldn't see 8 drivers into the walls that many times, right?
If it was Canada, for example, right? You have those two turns, especially Wall of Champions. That's a really good point. I don't know. I mean, I'm not such a. I think you also have to have. We're getting into this conversation about rules and how they're interpreted, and it's constantly a conversation in Formula One. Here's my like quick take: if there are enough drivers. It's like in a driver's briefing or meeting, right? You can change the rules if all teams and drivers agree to it. And there was a point where it's like there could be a majority of drivers breaking track limits or going over track limits to the extent that like the rules have to change in the race. It's like, all right, you know what? Everyone's getting a 5-second penalty, or we're not going to judge track limits at this point. I don't know. I don't know. Ugh. It's a hard thing to come to grips with, but.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I've heard so many different takes on it of, they should just know better. I think that it's just the way that it works in Austria is so particular. I feel that if they put larger curbs, or if they just put a bit of grass on the other side, just I think that's what Karun suggested, just put something on the other side of the curb that breaks the grip and the traction and that slows the cars down, and you'll see Lewis will not put a wheel there. And I like how Lewis was saying, oh, this car is so hard to drive, to try to justify it. That message was more to the FIA and race control than to his team. He's trying to say like, oh, it's so hard out here, I can't turn the car. I was like, that's bullshit, dude. Your teammate had zero infringement. So I think it's just, we need to figure out a system that works, because that just made F1 look a little silly this weekend.
I think a lot of people didn't quite understand what they were watching. But I don't know. I'm of the opinion, if it's going to be such an issue and there's nothing you can do about it in the immediate moment, if all drivers agree that you can exceed track limits, then that's what you're racing. I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
But then it takes some of the risk out of it for both driver and for team and for the fans. I don't know. I kind of liked it.
They've signed Austria until 2030, so they have to figure it out for next year, because that's just not
going to
work.
Well, that's the other problem too, is that if you say that you're going to allow drivers to exceed track limits at one circuit, what precedent does that set for other races?
Yeah, no, not a good one. Because you know, you give them that opportunity, then they're going to start arguing for it everywhere, right? So
they're only human at the end of the day, right? We'd all be doing the same.
Exactly. But track limits aside, that didn't change the current trend of Max just kind of crushing the whole field. Dominating performance once again at Red Bull's home. Won everything. He topped every session, qualifying, sprint pole, sprint win. I mean, I have nothing bad to say about the guy. He's just crushing everyone, and he even stopped towards the end of the race to take fastest lap. To steal it from Checo. Also, if it was any other driver who had it, I don't think they stopped, but since it was Checo, he did it. Huge flex, and kind of demoralizing for other teams, the fact that he was kind of laughing like, hey, fuck it, let's go for it, it's not that big of a risk. I'm like, ugh, I hate this.
There was a big gap, not a huge gap. I mean, it was what, 25 seconds?
Yeah, 24.
Him and Chuck.
Chuck.
I'm just going with the Willie T ribs right now. If Red Bull fucked that stop up, it could have cost him the race. This is what I was kind of hoping that would be that moment we talked about in the last episode, where it was like Max gets too arrogant, or he just like makes a mistake because he's feeling comfortable, and then he loses it, right? But the problem is that when that happens to Max, it's like Popeye eating spinach. He somehow like grows stronger. He probably like gets beat up by Yas somewhere.
Oh yeah, for sure. He gets locked Yas in a basement or something. Yeah. Also, Max doesn't make mistakes, and Red Bull rarely make mistakes. It just, for me, that just illustrated how far ahead Red Bull is and how big the margin is that they can take those risks. Big performance. That's all I can say.
Yeah, but I'll say this. I mean, I think Checo got a huge vote of confidence from Christian. Let's think about this. Like, supposedly was sick on Thursday.
That's true.
There was chatter about him maybe getting replaced with DR3 for the weekend. I don't think that was ever going to happen. But Checo also did a great recovery. Like, let's just give him some props. And he did what he needed to do after, you know, a pretty, I don't want to say questionable, but definitely a weekend where had he not recovered the way that he did, the Helmut Marcos of the world would be like, it might be time to replace him. That was like a weird Russian accent, but
yeah, he's doing his job right now as the number two. He's in P2 in the driver's championship, not pissing off Max too much. And when he does, Max, you know, deals with it. So Yeah, I think he's pretty solid. He's got a contract for next year that's been repeated several times. As we know, contracts don't mean shit in F1, but I do think I do think he will be there with his given his performance. He's, let's just say he's back. He needed a good result. He's got it.
Yeah.
And yeah, if he keeps putting these together, he might pick up a win or two. I feel like he has a better chance of picking up a win than someone else, like a, than a, another team. I mean, like a non-Red Bull driver. So we could see a Sergio Perez win, I think, at some point in the next races. But
next few races. I mean, please give us a national anthem more exciting than the Dutch national anthem, Checo. Please. Checo had, he had a great battle with someone who I think is out for blood.
Ooh.
Right now. And he's known as the smooth operator.
That's right. They had a, that was a huge battle and probably the most entertaining battle of the race.
Of the arguably the season.
Yeah, up there. It's definitely up there. I don't remember all the battles so far, but definitely up there. And what I thought was funny was, what did Carlos mean when he was telling his race engineer, oh, he's trying to intimidate me. He's intimidating me. Because if you look at racing, that's kind of what the point of racing is, right? Wheel to wheel.
He's trying to catch you slipping, dog.
Yeah. Intimidated. He's like, what? Is he like staring him down as he as he's passing him? I feel like that's maybe it's a lost in translation from Espanol, but like
that's kind of what I thought it was. I was like, it might be a little slip on the English, but I'm going to say this though. That battle was incredible to watch. And good on both drivers for not crashing. I mean, they were wheel to wheel for four. Like it was, I think it was like lap 59 to 61. Yeah.
Props to Checo, but I think Carlos Sainz needs a lot of credit because he's obviously in a slower car. And, you know, the first time he was passed, he managed to bring it back and I pass him back. And Checo was not getting DRS. So Carlos is getting DRS. So he would be able to pass him back. And I think once Checo figured that out, he made it stick. But yeah, Sainz is on an upward trend, man. And so is Ferrari back in business here. I'm not falling for it in terms of, oh yeah, we're going to go challenge Red Bull. But as I've been saying over the last few episodes, the ebb and flow between Ferrari, Aston Martin and Mercedes was, that was a perfect example this weekend in which one team clearly is performing well at this particular track and has the advantage over the two others. And Ferrari was that team, clearly that P2 this whole weekend.
They seem to do really well in Austria generally, right?
Yeah.
I will say this though. They almost fucked up that entire race strategy early on.
Let's hear it.
No, I'm not going to go on about it, but there was, you know, when there was that first yellow, full safety car, and they bring Carlos in, I thought of you in that moment. I was like, how is P Money feeling about this?
I mean, every time there's a VSC or a safety car, I'm a little afraid. Yeah, of strategy. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
My heart beats quicker. I'm glad I don't have one of those connected watches because the spikes would go up every strategy decision. Yeah, you kind of hold your breath and hope for the best.
I mean, and they double stacked too. Ferrari.
They did. They pulled it off.
In that moment, I was like, oh God, here it goes.
Fuck you.
I was like, oh, here's a real quick way for Ferrari to fuck up their whole weekend in a matter of 5 seconds. But yeah, they somehow benefited, I think, too, from obviously all the penalties that were being opered out.
Well, actually, no, Ferrari did not benefit because Carlos Sainz should have picked up a P4. He went down to P6. Who benefited in all this was Lando Norris, who had a great weekend, got a position on Sainz after his 10-second penalty. P4 for Lando in that newly upgraded McLaren. And I'll tell you what, it seems like McLaren's about to join that fight. We know we kept talking about, oh, Alpine could bring it, but it seems like McLaren is quicker these days and could get, you know, join the pack behind Red Bull.
I'm not there yet. I'm not quite there yet.
Well, we'll see next weekend, because Lando does do really well in Austria. That's where he got his first podium. He's usually very strong there. We'll see at Silverstone. That's coming up. And, you know, obviously Silverstone is a fast track, really different to Austria. And if McLaren does well there, oof, we've got some exciting races to look forward to till the end of the year. And then, I'm sorry, I said 15. It's 13 races left.
Uh-huh. Lando had a great race. Great race. The Lewis and Lando thing will never not be funny to me.
This is also the track, remember, where Lewis was stuck behind Lando a couple years ago, and he said, great driver.
Yeah. Which, like,
oh man,
I think was genuine, but I don't know. Listen, McLaren, we'll see what happens. Piastri was kind of nowhere.
Well, remember, Piastri did not get the upgrades.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's a huge... that's why I'm saying the upgrades seem to work, because they're really... You really see the impact on Norris. I'm excited for Silverstone to see where they're at there.
Yeah, I think that would be a true test of McLaren. We'll see.
For sure. Aston Martin and Mercedes this weekend. What the fuck? Aston Martin, I will say, fared a little better than Mercedes. Fernando ended up getting P5. Which is not too bad. And Mercedes, oof, kind of nowhere. I feel like in the sprint format, Mercedes might have gotten caught off guard with that one and only free practice before qualifying. And they never caught up to the rest. And they kind of just struggle there and finished P7 and P8.
We're talking about consistency with McLaren. Like, let's talk about the consistency with Merck. I mean, we're like, oh, okay, they're gonna bring it back. You know, they had the upgrades last race in Canada.
Did really well.
I mean, I had Lewis on the podium and
I had Lewis winning.
Yeah. Yeah. You had Lewis winning the race. I had Lewis P2. And, you know, regardless of all the black and white flags, the penalties, it still wasn't a great race for them either way. Like, it wasn't a good weekend. I think there's just too many signs saying they haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. If you remember last race, they praised Mick Schumacher for his work on the sim Friday night to Saturday night to turn it around. I think that word on the street, word in the paddock, is that Mercedes is making it a habit to start the weekends on the back foot, going different directions for setup. It seems like the sweet spot for setup is hard to find. And given they only had one session, it was really hard for them. And you saw they were, I'm not going to say nowhere, but they were not where we expected them to be. Lewis also was subpar this weekend with going over track limits. Because of it, he didn't make it to past SQ1. So that ruined his sprint. Russell had some issues, hydraulic issues, so it wasn't a very smooth weekend, and I think that they need to rectify this. They have big updates coming into Silverstone, so that's round two, so we will see that ebb and flow again. Once again, it's hard to really figure out, but I think that if the updates work, we'll see Mercedes back closer to where we expect them to be.
I will say this, there is not going to be a lot of love lost between Aston Martin and Mercedes, especially given that Mercedes is there engine supplier.
Yeah, and they're both British teams, right? They're both Aston Martin is
based at Silverstone.
Yeah, they can see Lance Stroll's office. I'm just imagining like an all glass office, can see the track from his office basically. So they're the real locals there. And Aston Martin has cut the lead down to 3 points to Mercedes. We suggested last episode that Lance Stroll might want to start racking up some points, and he did. Out-qualified Alonso in the sprint, out-raced him in the sprint, and let's just say that he held his own, finally.
Sure.
Wow. Not so convinced. Okay. He did score half the points.
I'll just say this. The complaining after the race is just, I didn't like it. And I don't care about Aston Martin for what they did, because it's like everybody was doing it. Well, and I guarantee you, I can guarantee you there was one person behind it, and it was Fernando Alonso. Because he knows, he loves playing politics.
Could be. Could be. Or it could be that F1 has always been like that. I think that whenever teams get a chance to protest a result, they'll do it.
And fine.
As I said earlier, little stat here, 1,200 infringements, and some people say even 1,500. So you have to look at it. And it raised their drivers up. So, and I'm sure they're not the only team that protested.
Fine. I don't know. I didn't like it.
Fair. I'm wondering what you would have said if Merck had done that.
I just don't. It's my least favorite part of the sport. It's like the race results are. It's like in football. If you're in soccer, he was, the goal was offsides, but you didn't rule it offsides or vice versa. The result is a result. Once you cross the finish line, I don't think there should be any, like, you can't complain about it. I don't agree with that rule in Formula One.
I think it's one of the only sports I feel that will change results, motorsports, not just F1.
Right.
After the event is done.
Correct.
Because like, nothing, because it's, you know, it's lap distance sensitive, right? Nothing, so things can impact. And I'm not a fan of that either, to be honest. And the politics. But you know what? They'll have a chance to go head to head at Silverstone on their home track because British team, British drivers. And it's going to be fast there. What did you think of Toto's message to Hamilton when Hamilton was basically complaining and Toto said, hey, can you shut the fuck up and just drive, please? Paraphrasing here.
As a fan or an objective Formula One observer?
Let's do both.
As a fan, I really hated it. However, it hurt, keep it to yourself. As an F1 observer, I was like, ooh, this is juicy.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, yep, Lewis has a tendency to get on the radio when he's upset speak to the team in a way that, yeah, I don't know. I'd drive the car now. He sounded like an angry father, basically being like, this is what you get. You get a piece of shit Hyundai Sonata and you're driving it whether you want to or not. And you're going to drive it to prom. And otherwise you're getting picked up by your mom.
I don't know. Well, there goes the Hyundai sponsorship. We already lost Kia earlier.
Hey, Dodge, pick us up.
Yeah, for real. Well, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. I don't think I'm not going to read too much into it. Like, oh, yeah, does that mean he's going to retire? No, but I thought it was pretty funny, especially where Merck was this weekend. Let's look at the midfield and see, because there's a few things we want to pick out in the midfield. Just want to point out that Alpine has now scored points in the last five races with Gasly in P10, given those penalties. Williams very close to getting points. Actually, if Albon did not get that penalty post race, he would have jumped Gasly. I think you wanted to mention Haas here, the Redemption Boys.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be quick. It's 4th of July, and Haas claims that they're an American team. Claims. I mean, they're supposedly, you know, they've got their spot in North Carolina where Gunther Steiner lives full time. So, yes, they are based here. I do not understand how this team continues to just, like, where are they? Where are they? Who are they?
Existential question. I don't know.
Right. I mean, that on track. And it, I was like, I just, because it seems, I mean, Hulk car catches on fire once again. So that's the second time this season.
Yeah. And you know, it was funny because Hulk got a warning for track limits after he had retired. I don't know if you got that.
Amazing.
That's how like overwhelmed race control was, I think.
Yeah. They're like, oh, they like just look at the data. They're like, oh, never mind. His car's on fire. Next. Haas, it just seems like we don't talk about them that much on this podcast, but it just seems like they need to figure something out.
They need to figure out their race pace. Yeah. Because in qualifying, Hulk, man, he's always up there. He's a beast in qualifying. But he just can't hang in the race because his tire, like the, I think Haas just destroys its tires. So please figure it out, because it'd be nice to see Haas mix it up in that midfield. But there's another team that's really hurting right now, and that's AlphaTauri. They were horrible this weekend, and De Vries did not impress me. He was on the list of needs a result, and I'm afraid he did not pull through.
Oh, man, Nick De Vries. I mean, K-Mag's got to be pissed at this point, because they had their little moment in Canada, which at least K-Mag was like, we're just racing each other hard. It's totally fine. I mean, if you're sitting as a back marker, you got to keep yourself entertained somehow, right?
Right. Yeah, racing's racing. Right?
Racing is still racing. But yeah, man, I... AlphaTauri is definitely, I think, the biggest question mark for me this season. I'm like, how could you regress that much? Nick De Vries is definitely more like... is more talented than he's showing. So I don't know.
And so is Tsunoda, actually. Well, yeah, just a note that De Vries did finish ahead of Tsunoda this race.
Good.
But yeah, they need work. Rumor has it that they're going to change names again next year, rebrand. I personally vote for bring back Toro Rosso, please. But it's probably going to be Red Bull brands, I guess.
Blueberry Red Bull, my favorite.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. I can't wait to see the livery on that.
It's pretty much what they look like now. So
it's time to look at the Stan Championship this weekend. And we both took a lot of risks, but I might have gone a little too far in my risk taking and got 0 points out of it, because hoping the rain would come. And you scored 15 points for Max's race win. So you extend your lead to 155 to my still 108. And we are going to Silverstone this weekend, back to back. And it is your turn, sir.
No.
To your predictions first.
Ooh. Hear me out. I'm going to go with Max on pole. Lewis Hamilton wins this race.
Wow. At home.
At home. I'm going to go with a Fernando Alonso P2, Checo P3. I'm taking risks. I got a little lead here. I'm going George Russell P4 in the smooth operator in P5.
He won his first and only race here last year.
And the Gromo. It's hard to bet against him right now, Nick De Vries.
Okay, wow. You are taking
we still haven't hit here. A Gromo once this season, but whatever.
No, it'll come. Let's just say Gromos are also getting more and more rare, I feel. Those are big risks. I'm going to go a bit more conservative, I think, and try to lock down some points, hopefully. I'm putting Max on pole. Max wins. I'm putting Leclerc P2, Hamilton P3, Perez P4, and Alonso P5 with the Gromo going to, I'm sorry, De Vries.
We're both covering the De Vries.
I know. Just to be clear, it's not something that we want to happen. It's just we're trying to get points. Silverstone's usually a huge weekend, so it's going to be exciting. Record-breaking crowds for sure.
Always.
All the Lando fans, Team LH, all that good stuff.
So just quickly, the quick Lando shout-out. He was funny on his radio this weekend, and when team came through and was like, all right, P4. He's like, oh, it's because all the papaya fans that are in Austria.
Oh, yeah, because he got driver of the day.
He did. Well, that was it. That was it. He got driver of the day. His radio is always classic.
Yeah. Welcome back to the top, Lando. We miss you. We need more Lando racing at the front. Driver of the day, and I love how no one votes for Max because he's just like in his own league. So it's like, okay, who's second best, basically, and we'll give him driver of the day. That wraps it up in Austria for us. Going to Silverstone this weekend. Make sure to follow us on social media, and we'll see you for the Silverstone debrief.